Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I'm your host, Nina Alvarez. Today we have a very special guest, someone who's been very important in my life as a writer. This is Jack Simmel. He is an actor and director in Rochester, New York. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Thank you for having me, Nina.
Well, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on Jack. Jack is a native Rochesterian who became enamored of theater in the fifth grade. He joined the drama club at Monroe High School, and while still in his senior year at the School Without Walls, Jack studied theater arts at Nazareth College. He has played with many Rochester community theater groups, including Shipping Dock Theater, Rochester Community Players, JCC Center Stage, Method Machine, Bread and Water Theater, Hourglass Play Reading Series, Greater Rochester Repertory Companies, that's also known as the GRRC, on whose board of directors he has served. Jack was invited this year to be an artist in residence at the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center, MUC, even though he has played with the Penfield Players several times as an actor and stage manager. Death Trap marks the first time that Jack is directing a show since high school, and he's having quite a good time doing it. So this is your directorial, we'll call it your directorial debut as an adult.
Yeah, you could say that.
It's a very big deal, I think. After many, many years as an actor, you're making the switch.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of questions for you about your directing process and about, you know, your, I guess, life as an actor and the transition to director. But first, I'd like you to, you know, I guess, just take the stage and tell our audience a little bit about yourself, why you got into acting. We'll say, I know that it's been, you obviously got bitten by the bug when you were really
young.
Did you have any idea either why it happened or how it's affected your life?
Well, it happened in fifth grade. We were doing some patriotic presentation for the school assembly, and I was having a blast. Then there was applause, and applause, to me, in any case, is more addictive than any drug you could name. There's just nothing like the feeling of a crowd clapping for you. It's just a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, it is.
Gets into your blood. When I discovered, when I got to high school, discovered the drama club, that was it for me. And I've been acting since then, except for a large block of time when I was living out west and had a job that wouldn't allow the time for it. But even then, I was playing to an audience in a way. I was dealing with customers who were always in a panic when I got there, and by the time I left, they were calm.
So you had to do some alchemy.
On a good day.
And you probably had to perform someone who was calm themselves and and happy to be there.
Right. Absolutely. Every day.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I got back to Rochester and fell back into the Rochester community theater community, started doing a bunch of shows. In fact, the first show I did when I got back to town was with Penfield Players.
And when was this?
That would have been, I moved back to Rochester in 2007, so it would have been 2008-ish, or even as late as 2009 that I got back into it.
Not too long ago.
Yeah.
Now, you, those years in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you were still doing theater throughout, you know, even though you were working.
Pretty much, yeah. In my 20s and early 30s, I was doing, it was mostly in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot. It's when I worked with Shipping Dock and a couple of the other Rochester community players.
Now, Shipping Dock isn't around anymore, right?
No, they kind of went under right around the time I got back to town, although there's no causation there.
Well respected, I remember.
They were, yes. Yeah. It was run by Barbara Biddy, with assistance from her husband, Fran. And they were doing very edgy stuff that no other group in town was doing. They were the first to do the Normal Heart in this area, for example.
What's a Normal Heart for our listeners?
It's a play about the beginning of the AIDS epidemic.
So that was one of the early plays, probably before Angels in America.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, Shipping Dock and Barbara Biddy were very well respected. And still are, Barbara still is well respected in many circles, as well she should be. In my opinion, she's a genius director.
Is she still in Rochester?
She is still around. She's doing a few things, teaching a couple of classes here and there since Shipping Dock went defunct.
I remember one of the first plays that I went to in Rochester when I was, my early 20s was a Shipping Dock play. And it was an incredible experience. It was an experimental play. And of course, this was a long time ago. It was like 15 years ago, so I don't quite remember the name. But when I came back to Rochester, they were one of the first theater companies I looked up. And unfortunately, they weren't around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's great that you had that experience. So you did plays with them?
Yep.
So having been, seen community theater through the 70s and 80s, 90s, 2000s.
The 90s. I took the 90s off.
You took you were working out west. Right?
Yeah. Right.
Do you see, I have so many questions about this, but mostly, has theater, community theater changed over the last 30 years?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I left town in 91 and there were about five community theater groups, among them Penfield Players, Rochester Community Players, Shipping Dock, Blackfriars, and the JCC. That's about it. When I came back in 2007, I found there to be upwards of 30 or 40. And now there are upwards of 40 or 50 groups in town. It seems it's the thing to do. If you want to put on a show, start your own company and put it together.
But do you feel that the work is, are as many boundaries being pushed as there were in the 80s and 70s?
Unfortunately not. It's very hard to sell the kind of edgy stuff that, for example, Shipping Dock was doing in the 80s. And 90s. There's a lot more musical theater going on in town, and that seems to be the stuff that sells the most tickets.
Right. And now with more competition, making sales,
much more competition.
It's much more important to keep your theater up.
Right. And there's, the pool of talent has grown, but in my mind, has not grown as much as the number of companies who need them.
Right.
So that leads to, an uneven mix, put it that way.
Yeah.
there's some very good theater going on in this town, and a lot of it.
That's true. What was the, I know this is going to be hard to put it name to words, but what was the wildest role that you ever played?
That was a Shipping Dock show called Episode 26, which is a spoof on the Flash Gordon stories.
Yeah.
And very funny. My character was Professor Art Deco. And it was, as far as I know, is the only science fiction-y thing that Shipping Dock ever did. But it was really hilarious.
So you're basically playing a comic strip. Character.
Comic strip character, yeah.
So larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been fun. So you came back to Rochester in 2008, 2009, and you got back into the theater scene. And the first role you took was with Penfield, mm-hmm. Penfield Players.
Right.
What was that role?
The play was Seven Keys to Bald Pate.
Okay.
And I played the Hermit. In that, who is also a kind of a groundskeeper for this remote, isolated summer lodge. And the play takes place in the wintertime. A writer rents the place out in the winter just for his own use to finish writing his piece. And people just keep showing up and making things complicated for him.
I actually like that idea. Premise. Yeah. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah. The story, the book, takes place over a period of 3 days. Mm-hmm. And of course the play just happens over a period of a single night. So,
yeah.
But it was a fun part to play.
You know what I really admire about you, Jack, is how much you just clearly love theater and the theater community, and it's what you do.
Yeah.
You are so well connected, so well known, so well liked in the Rochester theater community, and it's true. And you're not. It doesn't seem like you're very spread thin. You're not trying to do all these other arts. You're really about theater as an actor and now as a director. And one of the reasons I really appreciate that is because I feel a little spread thin in my own world. And I kind of admire that what can happen when you really focus, on one art, you know, and also the connections you have in the community. I tell people about you, it's always the story of Leo Wool, of how you and I, you know, were friends, and I went to see a show of yours, and I saw you on stage in this one scene at a writing desk, and you were not playing a writer. You're playing like an insurance
tax guy or something, yeah.
But something about I saw Whitman at a writing desk, and then I ran home, and I started writing this play, and instead of it being Whitman, it was a literary scholar, and then that play became The Life of Leo Wool. And then I very nervously, I think I found the email I sent to you, and I was like, would you look at this? And it needed to go through a lot more work, but it finally got to a place where I was happy with it. And while I was getting it there, you were very graciously accepted, the role that I had kind of written with you in mind. And brought on Sandy Henschel, who was a respected director and mm-hmm. a veteran, to this unknown playwright's play. And she came on and was so great, and then brought on all these talented actors for the staged reading, the Fringe staged reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good show. And we had great talkbacks afterwards.
Yep.
And because it was a good staged reading, because it got enough buzz, and because of your help, it was then able to go into the GRRC into a full production later.
Right.
That
in the interim between the staged reading, I was invited onto the board of Greater Rochester
yes.
Repertory Companies. Yes. Oh well, I've got a show on stage.
Yeah. So all that to say that I was a neophyte, but because I was inspired by you, and because of your good favor in the community, you were able to bring talented people onto my show, which anyone listening who's a playwright, you can write a great play, but if you don't have great actors and a great director, it's gonna flop most likely, you know? So that was a great experience for me. Now you have a lot of stage presence when you're clearly very alive and have a lot of vitality in normal life, but also, especially, I think it comes across on stage. So I've always been curious about, I always want to know, like, existentially what that's like for you. I know that you've said briefly, like, acting is pretending, and that you just love to do it because it's just how you are, but I was wondering if there's anything more you can say about that experience, how it feels to be on stage, or how it feels to get into a character.
Getting into a character is again, there's a lot of pretending, but there's also figuring out who that person is. And the exercise of doing that has helped me figure out who I am as a real live person. Not that it's helped me change anything about myself or improve anything, but I understand, you know, through trying to get into the heads of all these fictional characters, or in some cases, historical characters.
I like that.
Trying to piece together their backstory. in acting classes, you'll do that, pass out a scene to the students and say, okay, read the scene now. Tell me who these people are.
Yeah.
You know, what are their favorite colors? What do they eat for breakfast? What kinds of, what's their clothing style? You know, you get into people's heads. And that's a fascinating process all itself, trying to figure that out.
Because I'm fascinated with that question. So is that something you do on your own, or is that something you do with your director, that backstory stuff?
It depends. I do that pretty much on my own when I'm working on a character. And then you bring that to the rehearsals, and if the director has a different vision, then you have that discussion there. In some cases, for example, I'm working with an inexperienced actress, for example, in this show, and she has asked for help with, you know, figuring out who her character is. And unfortunately, her character is the one who gets... can I give it away? No, I'm not going to give
it away. Okay, good. Yeah. No spoilers.
Her character gets... But, and she's having, she's going through her own process of trying to figure out how to play the character. And you really need to know who the character is before, you know, and then how to play the character falls right into place.
So it's one of those things where if you're sitting there and you're thinking about your character and what your character would eat for breakfast, like you said, would he have Frosted Flakes or oatmeal or an orange or nothing?
Or steak and egg. The best actors don't let you see them acting.
Right.
You know, they are the character, at least while they're on stage. Some of them stay in character the whole run of the play and drive their friends away. Some of them can turn it on and off like a switch. And again, it goes back to that pretending thing, you know, okay, I'm Jack Simmel, and then, okay, suddenly I'm Karl Marx, and then I'm back to Jack Simmel. You know, it's just pretending.
Speaking of Karl Marx, I love that you have made a point, at least, you know, last year, I know in your show, Marx in Soho, that to bring your political views, your activist views into your work. I really admire that, and I think I'd like to see actually more of that.
Well,
I mean, in the world, but also, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I'll be reprising the Karl Marx piece, Marx in Soho, by Howard Zinn, at this year's Fringe Festival. I'll be performing it one night at the Muck during Fringe Festival.
That's great. I really encourage everyone to go out. It's a really fun, interesting, smart show. I loved it. Can you give a tiny little synopsis?
Yeah. Well, hopefully most people know who Karl Marx was. the premise of the play, which was written by Howard Zinn, who was one of our most eminent historians. His work, The People's History of the United States, has been reprinted and taught in most of the progressive schools in the country. So the premise of the play is that Karl Marx has been biding his time on the other side, as it were, and watching what's going on Earth. And he's very upset with the bad rap that communism has gotten, mostly at the hands of Joe Stalin, who turned it into a dirty word. And he argues with the powers that be on the other side to have a chance to come back to Earth and clear his name, make his case. And so after much arguing, he's given permission to come back for an hour or so and make his case, try to clear his name. So that's basically the premise. He comes back and he gives a talk about what he was thinking.
Yeah. And when it's he very wrote, funny, too.
Oh, it is. It's there's funny. A lot of self-deprecating humor. Marx, he talks in this piece a great deal about his family life, his wife and his daughters, their living situation, his friends, what was going on in the 1850s and 60s when he was writing Das Kapital.
Yeah.
He talks a little bit about Engels, and they get together. Of course, the two of them co-wrote the Communist Manifesto, which is more famous than Das Kapital and much easier to read. You know, he says, what's more boring than reading political economy, writing political economy?
Yeah, and what I loved about the show is it reminded me of how fervent I was, you know, in my grad school and undergraduate days about socialism and I guess, you know, I guess materialism, but, you know, mostly about like social equity, mm-hmm. you know, and fairness. And it was great. And of course, Howard Zinn, who people have read, you know, People's History of the United States. And, you know, most people don't know that he also wrote this play. And, yes. you know, I think it's a good to go and see it.
He wrote, when I was given the opportunity, when I joined the board of GRRC, I was looking around for some good lefty theater to put on stage,
yeah.
and had been reading Zinn, and I wondered, did Zinn ever write any plays? And so I looked into it, and in fact, he wrote three. The Marx in Soho, which is a one-man piece. He also wrote a long piece called Emma, about Emma Goldman.
Right.
Which I would love to put on stage sometime, but yeah. it's, being a historian, Zinn is, let's say, not quite a Broadway class playwright.
All right.
And, so Emma kind of rambles around a lot. I would like to work with a writer, maybe tighten Ooh, it up, add some yeah. music, and then put it on stage. He also wrote, the third piece is called Daughter of Venus, which of the three has become kind of dated. It's about the 50s nuclear crisis and mm. do we need atomic weapons or not.
So it seemed like that was part of a process for you, a transition where you were an actor and then you were brought onto the board at this theater company, the GRRC,
mm-hmm.
and you were now able to make some decisions or have some weight in what was performed, what was put on. And then, was it then that you realized that you also wanted to direct, or had that been already in the works?
That had been, you know, kind of a thorn in my side for a while. When I came back from being out west and started working with local groups again, it was a little bit frustrating to work with directors who, in my view at the time, didn't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, missed something about a character or didn't go into the play, as deeply as I thought they should have, or, you know, that sort of thing. So there was, and not to belittle any of the directors I've worked with. They're all, you know, have talent and vision, and it just didn't seem to coincide with my vision. So I was looking for
yeah.
a way to put my own stamp of, you know, on the work.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the play that you are going to be debuting in a 1 week from this air date. From when? Yes.
Yeah.
So tell us everything about it, its name, when it's when the show's going to go on, how people can get tickets.
Okay, the play is called Death Trap, and it was written by Ira Levin, who is better known as a novelist. His most famous piece was Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that Ira Levin. <Yeah. laughs> The play is about a playwright, Sydney, who's in a bit of a slump. He's got writer's block. And he receives a finished play from a student of his from a seminar that he had conducted the previous summer. And this play's got everything. It's one set, five character, moneymaker. The laughs in the right places, I'm quoting the play. It's just everything, can't miss, surefire, millions of dollars, and that's not talking about the Death Trap t-shirts and all. And being a thriller, a writer of thrillers. He has a collection of weapons on his wall and is used to plotting murders on paper. So he jokes with his wife about killing this young playwright and stealing his surefire can't-miss play and sending it out into the world under his own name, just for the money.
Yeah.
Well, his wife doesn't like that idea at all and persuades him to collaborate with the young writer, you know, give him a little pointing up in the right places, a little polishing. So he sets that in motion. And the young playwright comes to his house, meets his wife. They talk about the play and about collaborating. Well, trying to do this without giving too much away, Sidney snaps. He realizes that collaborating is too tedious, and he kills the young playwright, which freaks his wife out no end. And that's just the first scene.
Dun, dun, dun.
So what happens? What happens to Sidney and his wife? What happens to the play? And then we have the visiting psychic, Helga Tendorp, who works with the Amsterdam police, most often picking out murderers and finding lost puppies and such for them. She's visiting, staying in a cottage nearby, while resting up and working on a book with the owner of that cottage. Anyway, she feels the pain and the psychic storm coming from Sydney's house and comes over to see what she can do about it. And
I'm into it.
It really is. There are twists and turns and there's violence, even a little blood. In the end, there's a very twisted ending.
Is there anything you'd like to say as we wrap up about, I don't know, your life in theater, the Rochester community, anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Rochester, one of the reasons that it was comfortable coming back to Rochester, is that there is quite a lively theater community and arts community in general. There's a lot of music in this town. There are graphic arts all over the place. There's an art gallery right down the street from where we are.
We're recording at Writers and Books, by the way. That's where we are.
It's a very artistically lively town. It's a great place to be. If we could only have more summertime, it would be perfect.
Oh my gosh. 6 months of the year being cold is tough. But I think it's probably good for the arts. People are suffering.
People huddling in their freezing studios creating.
Yeah. Well, Jack is a dear friend, and I am so glad that you were able to come on the show today and talk about your acting and your directing. And I think we get a little bit of your process. And I'm very excited about your upcoming show.
It's going to be great.
I'm very inspired by how dedicated you are to the Rochester theater community. Uh-huh. So thank you for that, Jack.
Thank you, Nina.
And thank you for being on Lit Up.
Glad to be here.
Well, once again, this has been Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I've been recording at Writers and Books Literary Center, bringing words and people together in Rochester, New York. If you'd like to be in contact with me, you can email nina@dreamyourbook.com. Until next week.